Welcome to the Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal. We examine things like habits of entrepreneurs, emerging trends, financing, marketing, where to get help, even how to get started on your own. By the way, I love hearing from small business owners and employees. Let's talk about your business. Send me an email at gdeal@compassmedianetworks.com. Today's stories: can small businesses solve the soggy fries dilemma for food deliveries and the niche business of cleaning up fentanyl spills? Those stories after this. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. Day one for a new employee. Instead of joining in productively, they face a confusing, disjointed process and piles of paper forms. With Kronos, you can automate the entire onboarding process, creating a better experience for employees and freeing you to focus on the human part of your job. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/onboarding. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Business models, much like French fries, don't always travel well. This is a lesson for the restaurant industry as it struggles to draw diners through the door or the drive-thru and looks to food delivery apps to soothe the financial heartburn. Can a small business find a solution? Chains such as McDonald's are rushing to link up with the likes of Uber Eats, but Wall Street Journal business columnist John Stoll says we're learning that McDelivery, as he calls it, comes with a costly downside. John, explain.
Yeah, what's been going on for longer than I realized is that people are eating out less. They're less inclined to be trafficking any of these fast food up to casual dining, even less than fine dining. But you know, some of the places that you think are hopping aren't hopping nearly as much as they were maybe a decade ago. So that's a challenge for executives at a time when groceries are delivering. People are eating at home more. They're looking for different options, and so obviously, with the boom in delivery services, whether it be Uber Eats or DoorDash or Grubhub, more and more of these traditional, deeply entrenched restaurant chains are embracing that for all good reason, but there are some downsides to that.
All right, so at the heart of this, as you point out, is restaurants' efforts to deliver food in a timely fashion while it's still tasting good. And you open your piece with the French fry example. Like, you know, how does it come from this terrific fry in the restaurant not morphing into, as you say, a cold, limp, greasy wedge that takes some courage to swallow? How are they going to solve this?
Well, I don't know if it can be solved on the French fry. There's been a lot of innovation and or deterioration of the French fry over the last 30 or 40 years with health concerns and moving from one kind of oil to another and what have you. So the French fry is indicative of what maybe you were dealing with several different meals that were meant for restaurant consumption or, you know, something within 5-10 minutes and being delivered in 35 minutes. Pizza works well as opposed to the French fry because pizzas are built a certain way and kept hot a certain way. And there's been a long sort of tradition of pizza delivery. The French fry would probably take, and it, not to say that it's not happening, but it's probably going to take a lot of research and development on the part of food companies, either suppliers or the restaurants themselves, to say, we've come up with a new innovation that's going to keep it fresher longer. And that probably will happen. I don't know when. I don't know how important that is to society, but obviously the McDonald's of the world, which, you know, French fries are a core staple of what they do, they're going to have to figure this out if it's going to be compelling to create a complete order. There may be things on the menu that travel well across town. The French fry is not one of them, and the milkshake is not one of them. Mm. So you either change delivery so that you have better tools on board of a car or a bicycle, as crazy as a deep fryer, I don't know, or you change the technology in the food. I hate to use the word technology, but innovation, right? The recipe.
Right. We're speaking with John Stoll, business columnist at the Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece entitled Soggy Fries versus Sagging Profits. Restaurants Face Delivery Dilemma. All right, so this sounds like it's going to take different efforts from restaurants and these delivery services, whether it's Uber Eats or Grubhub, whatever, to come up with something better. How long away are we maybe from this?
Well, it depends on where you are. So I think if you're in San Francisco, New York, one of the places that are more tightly congested and packed, and delivery doesn't take as long as it might take in the heartland where I live in Michigan, you might not at all identify with this story because you'd say, well, I get the French fries and they're pretty good. Mm. I haven't suffered the quality issues where a lot of delivery has actually innovated is in places where delivery is part of life, and it has been for a long time. So the question is, how much room does delivery have to grow, and how much of an impediment on margins is it going to be for the businesses that want delivery to be more part of their business? So if Uber Eats wants to grow in Detroit, Michigan, or Cleveland, Ohio, or Dallas, Texas, they're going to need to figure out better ways to deliver more kinds of food across town. Conversely, if I'm McDonald's or Burger King or White Castle or Olive Garden and I want to get into this business, I've got to figure out how to lessen the impact that the middleman has or the middlewoman has on delivering the food when right now it costs me 20% or 40% of revenue to get it across town, i.e. I'm paying the delivery service way more than I would pay anybody at the counter.
Thanks, John. Wall Street Journal business columnist John Stoll. Finally, of the roughly 70,000 overdose deaths in the U.S. in 2017, more than 29,000 were linked to fentanyl and other dangerous synthetic drugs. That's an 850% jump since 2013. Fentanyl-fueled opioid deaths are moving out of private homes and into public spaces, which means the risk of secondary exposure is skyrocketing as well, especially for those who have to clean it up or come into contact with it unknowingly. Small businesses are involved in these types of cleanups. More from Jeff Mordock, Justice Department reporter at The Washington Times. Jeff, what are you hearing?
This is absolutely fascinating, Gordon. One of the big problems with the opioid crisis is we're starting to see users use a lot more fentanyl, and fentanyl is extremely deadly. If you absorb it in your skin, if you inhale it, if it goes up your nostrils, you could die instantly. And it's a cheaper, more addictive high. So we're seeing more and more opioid users use it. But the problem is it also leaves a very deadly mess, and it's very expensive to clean up. It costs between $30,000 and $50,000 to clean up. Insurance companies don't want to pay for it. Homeowners are not required to disclose it if fentanyl spilled. So it's this threat that nobody seems to be taking charge of.
Wow. All right, so that $30,000 number that you mentioned came to mind, almost fell off my chair. This was the price that was quoted to actually clean up a car where some of this stuff spilled during a drug bust, right?
That's exactly right. There was a rental car in St. Louis, this is what I had uncovered, where the police had opened a bag of heroin. Fentanyl spilled out in the trunk. They contacted a remediation company which specializes in hazardous chemicals, to clean it up. $30,000, which, by the way, is the low end of the price. Wow. It usually can go as high as $50,000, quoted $30,000 to clean it up. The rental company balked because their risk management lawyer said, we'd rather take the risk of a lawsuit because we think that's unlikely to happen rather than pay the $30,000 to clean it up. So now that car goes out, and the next person who rents it, who may have kids, may have a family, has no idea that fentanyl was all over the back of that trunk. And fentanyl looks like sand. So somebody could be running that car, see it, and think, oh, whoever had this car before me just went to the beach, sure, and not realize how deadly that is.
I mean, how many fistfuls of sand did you eat as a kid growing up if you were at the beach, right? I mean,
exactly.
Oh, my goodness. And the rental car company in this case has no obligation legally
to
tell the customer?
There's no legal obligation. There's no federal law requiring anybody to clean up fentanyl. There's no requirements, and there's no protocol. I was talking to a police officer who was telling me they cleaned up a heroin overdose in a very nice hotel in Massachusetts, and it's not the type of hotel you would associate with opioid addiction. And he was telling me that they told the hotel, you need to bring somebody here to clean it up. And the hotel said, no, our maids will take care of it. Huh. And they said, no, you don't emphasize how important this is. And the hotel kept saying, our maids got it, because there's no protocol for cleaning this up.
We're speaking with Jeff Mordock, Washington Times Department of Justice reporter. His piece is called Fentanyl Leaves a Lethal Mess That's Costly to Clean Up. So you mentioned a hotel. You got these rental cars and other public spaces too, right? We're seeing this stuff move into libraries, as you point out. Restaurants. I mean,
fast food bathrooms. Yeah. There's a lot of overdoses in fast food bathrooms. Libraries. Libraries are because they're places where you can go into. You don't have to pay to go into them, and it's a public space. So that's where people are ODing, and there's no policy to clean up. And the amount of fentanyl that police are finding when they arrest people are stunning. Last month in November in Maryland, there was a gentleman the state police pulled over, had 20 kilograms of fentanyl. 20 kilograms of fentanyl is enough to kill 1.5 times the population of the state of Maryland.
So what about some sort of protocol in the works? Are there any legislatures discussing this?
Right now there are not. And it's interesting because when people were cooking meth in their house, there was a big wave of state legislatures, and I talked to a state legislator in Indiana, who was at the forefront of meth laws requiring homeowners to disclose that at one point their house was used to cook meth. But there's no disclosure law with fentanyl, and we can't retroactively apply meth laws to fentanyl because meth laws are so specific. Okay. They're going to require new laws, and we're already spending so much money fighting the opioids. We're already trying to pass so many laws. Earlier this year, I think Congress passed 50 laws dealing with the opioid crisis, yet none of those laws dealt with fentanyl cleanup, that I think this is getting ignored, and it's a very silent threat.
Wow. So I'm guessing it's simple as not just hosing it down. What's actually required to clean up fentanyl?
Well, what you need to do is you need to quarantine the entire area, and you need a specialized vacuum. And that is one of the reasons why it is so expensive, because most likely you're going to need more than one vacuum. And those vacuums sell for about $1,200. And you have to throw that vacuum away. So now the remediation companies then now have to buy a new vacuum.
Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Mordock, Justice Department reporter at The Washington Times. Reminder, by the way, the Small Business Report is found on our website, which is thismorningwithgordondeal.com. That's also where you can hear our daily news program called This Morning, America's First News. Again, if you'd like to share your small business story, I'd like to hear it. Send me an email at gdeal@compassmedianetworks.com. Thanks for listening to the Small Business Report. I'm Gordon Deal.